welcome to episode 54 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Aaron Campbell. My guest tonight, I'm not fooled by the rocks that he's got. He used to have a little, but now he has a lot. But no matter where he goes, he knows where he came from. Hello, Anthony Lowry.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Hi, and you are from the block, correct?
Yes, I am.
That's crazy. Is it anything like we hear in songs or like the movies?
Not really. No. Jeez. It's pretty quiet over here.
Way to kill the fantasy, Anthony.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking you were really like, you know, this hard guy and we had something to be afraid of and you're sweet as pie.
Nah, I'm pretty cuddly, yeah.
Oh my. Well, I may have to explore that when the record button is not on. But you are somebody I've wanted to have on for a while, and I actually ran into you at SCG Philly, and mm-hmm. you actually offered to come on my show, which I didn't think you would be interested in, and that's part of the reason why you're here, is I wanted to hang out with you, and you seemed interested, and I wanted to give you that shot.
Yeah, definitely. I've been on Legit MTG. I used to write for Legit MTG a long time ago. That was actually how I got started writing for, like, a mass of people, I guess, and, you know, being able to, I guess, give back in a certain way. By joining this awesome show and, of course, talking to you is something that I think would be awesome for everybody.
I didn't know you were part of Legit MTG at one time.
Yes, I wrote for Legit MTG, I want to say, about a year-ish ago, right around when it first started.
Jeez, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. it's funny. I always pride myself on being somebody who does research on her guests, and I feel like I'm not doing a good enough job because something always slips through the cracks. Where I'm going through my notes, and I'm like, that wasn't that. So tell me about this card. Like, let's just steer away from that because there's holes. Yeah. And I need to hire an assistant or something.
Well, it was a long time ago, but and Legit MTG was like very, very small then. Like, we just started, so you can still find my work on there.
Okay, well, I may have to look you up then, because if your work then was anything like your work now, I would imagine it's quite good.
Why, thank you.
So I kind of want to get started, and this past weekend was a big weekend. It was game day. Now, from what I understand, your game day went a whole lot better than mine. So why don't you tell me about your weekend at game day?
Well, I played in two different game days.
Okay.
One on Saturday, one on Sunday, and I won both of them.
Ugh.
I really, really, really wanted this Chandra playmat. Like, it was like something I was setting out to do from the day I saw it, and I am Chandra's number one fan. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Uh-oh.
And I saw the playmat, I'm like, okay, look, I'm gonna win this thing. Like, I have to. So on Saturday, I went up to Westchester, New York, mm-hmm. at a store called Clarkson's Corner. Thank you, Steve, you're the best. And we played, I think it was four rounds, cut the top eight. And I just won the whole thing. Like, it snuck in at eighth place and just, like, battled back. On Sunday, I went down to Flushing, Queens, and played in that game day. That was four rounds, cut the top eight. And I didn't drop a match that one either. Played two different decks.
Okay, so the first day, I think you've been a big fan of this Big Red. Is that what that is?
Yes, I played Big Red, initially piloted by Andrew Shrout, and I think he got that from, I forget the guy's name.
Adam LaForest.
Like, yes, from Grand Prix Calgary.
I know that because I thought he was cute.
From Grand Prix Calgary. And I've been asking him a lot of questions about the deck. Him, Adrian Sullivan also has been working on the deck. And I piloted that deck on Saturday, and the deck was sweet. The deck was absolutely insane. It was very strong. It played a lot of like easy, a lot of cheap removal spells for the mana dorks and the 2/2s and shock and pillar of flame, and being able to just curve out into Boros Reckoner, Hellrider, Thunderbolt, Hellkite is just really strong in general. So
it's interesting because that's a deck that I played against it for the first time at a PTQ about 3 weeks ago, and it just seemed very random to me. Like, I remember I was playing somebody, and he didn't do anything for a lot of turns, and I'm assuming he just had some bad draws or whatever, but he dirtled for about a good five turns, and all of a sudden he's like, Thundermaw Hellkite. And I'm like, okay, so you killed five turns to do a Thundermaw. All right, whatever. So, and then all of a sudden he's like, turn six. He untaps, Thundermaw Hellkite. And I'm like... That's two. I'm like, okay. And then he goes turn seven. He untaps and he goes, Burning Earth. And I'm like, What's the point of your deck? I'm like, okay. So then obviously he wins because I was playing Jund at the time. And then we go to game two. And he goes turn three. He goes, Chandra's Phoenix. And I'm trying to piece together because I'm a synergy girl. So I'm like, Chandra's Phoenix to Burning Earth. There's no ties here. There's no, okay. So then he goes turn four. He goes, Hellrider. And I'm like, what is the point of any of this? I was like, I don't understand. And then he, of course, started, you know, shitting Thunder Maws again, and I was doomed. And I it went from being something that I sort of scoffed at, where I was like, just this is so random. Like, what is this? And then when I saw the cute guy from Calgary playing it, I was like, this is a thing? Like, oh, shit. And then you were Team Geist for a while, and you've been really championing Chandra, and then you hopped on board. And I'm just like, this is really happening. Like, where do you think this deck is coming from? Like, why is it picking up the way that it is?
Well, what makes the big red deck so good, not only is it the curve out draw of like Chandra's Phoenix or Boros Reckoner into Hellrider into Thundermaw that can just kill anybody if you don't have anything for it, but it's also, I think it's the best deck for Chandra Pyromaster because it has obvious synergy with Chandra's Phoenix. It picks off mana dorks, but, and I explained this in not only my article on Star City Games, which we'll get to later, but to my friends and everyone that has known me, is that Chandra is very good in racing situations, which is exactly what the deck wants to like try to engage in. Mm-hmm. When you're attacking with Hellriders and stuff, a lot of times Hellrider isn't, like, Hellrider doesn't have a good body compared to, like, a lot of other creatures in this format.
Right.
And Chandra not only allows that Hellrider to get through, but it forces a situation on your opponent where they either have to keep dealing with the Chandra, or they have to kill the Chandra and take another hit from the Hellrider and whatever else is happening. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but I'll go back to the synergy, I guess. But the synergy is that there's so much going on in terms of like, oh, well, I guess Burning Earth, too, main deck is just absurd against, like, Jund and, like, Blue-Eye Red and whatnot. But there's a lot of synergy with, like I said, Chandra and Chandra's Phoenix, Hellrider and Chandra. I guess Thunderbolt Hellkite doesn't really need synergy, but Shock is also another big inclusion, I feel, in the deck because the deck wants to tap out on turns 3, 4, 5, and being able to shock something into your curve out is a lot more helpful than just being able to pillar flame something and have something awkward happen with your Boros Reckoners and whatnot. Shock also manhandles Huntmaster of the Fells. Mm-hmm. It forces your opponent to make this awkward pass turn situation where you can just shock them with the trigger on the stack and just continue doing what you were doing, and they lose like a lot of momentum with that sort of play.
I have to say that now I'm back to Golgari control, I don't fear Big Red as much because now that I know what to sort of save my removal for, I'm a lot more prepared for it. And Burning Earth doesn't really faze me as much. Yes. So how have you been against Golgari control? Have you played it at all?
It's a really, really bad matchup.
Oh.
Desecration Demon is such a beating. Like, it's really hard to deal with large flyers. Like, the other problem with the big red deck is opposing Thundermaw Hellkites. Mm-hmm. If you don't have another Thundermaw or another way to, like, deal more damage than that Thundermaw is dealing on top of whatever else they're playing, then you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. Mostly because you're not very good defensively. Yeah. Like, you don't have very many recovery options compared to, like, Jund or Black-Green or whatnot. And Desecration Demon is oftentimes worse than Thundermaw because all of your you're only playing generally 16 creatures in a deck, 4 Phoenix, 4 Boros Reckoner, 4 Hellrider, 4 Thundermaw. You don't want to get rid of any of those. So it's very, very difficult, at least in game one. And actually, I think the game two matchup for Big Red is even worse. But you wind up with like these shocks and these pillar flames and these searing spears that don't do anything.
Yeah.
Maybe they might kill a Lifebane zombie here or there, but like even then, they're going to Lifebane zombie your Boros Reckoner. You have to waste a removal spell that can't go towards a, Desecration Demon. It's just really, really awkward.
Yeah. Now, you played a different deck on Sunday. You were going for more of a Boros theme, is that right?
Yes. I played what I'm calling, I guess, Big Boros.
Okay.
It basically takes the big red shell and adds War Leader Teleus and Assemble the Legion main deck, while still keeping the rest of the big red shell, the main deck Burning Earths and whatnot. and your sideboard has more options like additional Assemble the Legions, Oblivion Ring, and Four Thalias. So the idea of that was to be a little bit better against the blue-white-red decks, a little bit better against the black-green decks because you have Oblivion Ring and whatnot. And you still have some sort of game against the 4/4s in the format, like Loxonaut Smiter, Gore Clan Rampager, because that was another huge problem with the deck. It was really hard to kill Loxodon Smiters, and like the Naya deck in general was really hard to deal with.
Now, was there a deck that you enjoyed playing more than the other that you think you might take with you in your travels later on, or were these just sort of fun, you only had them for game day kind of things?
Oh, I definitely plan on playing the Boros deck for SCG Baltimore, which is this week, I'm pretty sure. So that deck is just so much fun. Like, oh my geez. Soundra is also much better in the Boros build, mostly because you can ultimate into War Leader's Helix and just 12 them. You can get it off of her zero ability, which is basically draw a card. If anybody says it's not draw a card, you are wrong. It is draw a card.
It's interesting because I feel like you're one of the few people who's actually been pro Chandra. Like Chandra's been, people really have their claws out with that card. And I've been pretty neutral. Like I admit that I'm not enough of an authority to really comment either way. And I don't usually play reds. That makes me even less, you know, inclined to speak on that. But I really don't understand why that card got so much flack. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but I feel like people, you know, before it even came out and before people really saw what it could do, people had already made up their minds that it wasn't a good card. And I really like that you've sort of adopted it and made it your own. And I hope that people see what it can do, you know, thanks to what you're doing with it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and I've explained this before. People are so used to using Planeswalkers in a very specific manner. Like when you see someone use a Jace Architect of Thought, you know exactly what you're going to do with it. And that's pretty much how it is with most Planeswalkers. You're going to do exactly what you want to do with it. But not many Planeswalkers have residual effects. I guess Jace is one of the only ones, I want to say. And even then, it's a very obvious one. But Chandra does a lot more over the course of a game, over the course of your opponent's turn, even though it doesn't actually do anything. Like, as I said in my previous example, I can let my Hellrider get through, and if you want to get rid of the problem, you have to attack. But if you attack, now I get to backswing.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you want to use Chandra for. And I think the other part is people don't want their Planeswalkers to die. They hate killing their own Planeswalkers. But that's okay with Chandra. Like, you're fine with that. If she's on the board for two turns and you only got to plus one her twice, you probably did about not only her two damage, but two plus whatever else your creatures are attacking for. Which is the whole point.
I think it's also a case of people lacking foresight. Like, I remember the last rotation that we went through when we lost Scars of Mirrodin and all that, that was my first rotation since I had come back to the game. And one of the things that I was really surprised about as we got closer and closer to the date was how people were so not prepared for rotation. I would play these Delver decks, and I'd be very nice about it, but I would just, you know, I'd be in conversation with them, and I'd be like, so, you know, have you given any thought to, you know, what you're going to do? You know, you're losing your Vapor Snags, and you're losing all this, and they'd be like, nope, I'm going to ride it out. And, you know, they just had no idea. And then when the rotation hit, they're like, oh god, these cards are gone. And and then there were people like me that were like a month in advance going, okay, I'm gonna need some of this, and I gotta be ready for this. And I feel like we've gotten very used to what red is now. We're used to mono red, or as I call it, Helen Keller wins, don't ask. You know, we're just used to how red is behaving right now. And I feel like red is one of those colors that when rotation happens is going to play very differently. And that's why I really like the idea of big red. And I really like the idea of Chandra now, because I think it's going to be a new time for red. And I think people need to get used to that idea that red is not always going to play the same. And I look forward to seeing red be, you know, more intelligent, if you will, and not just, you know, turn the card sideways.
yeah definitely. Like, you can even see it with like design changes. Like, red never used to really draw cards that much, and now they have like this sort of reverse looting effect where you discard first and draw first. We never used to have that with 5-ish years ago, not even like 3 years ago. So being able to have these different effects, like having red behave differently, same thing with blue. Everybody thinks blue needs to be a certain way. Blue is the control color, yet blue has been one of the best aggro colors in the past 2 years with Delver, Seekers, and Geist's Ancient Draft. So it's just a matter of, like, I think the whole spectrum of what colors do what in terms of people's view, I think that whole thing needs to change, and they need to look less about what colors are doing it and more about what cards are doing it.
yeah, that's a really good way to look at it. So, well, my game day did not go as well as yours. I went to one game day celebration on Saturday. I was playing Golgari Rock, and we didn't have a really big turnout. I think we only had about 13 people. I went to a game store. We have about 4 local game stores in my area, so I went to one that I don't usually go to because it's a little far away from me, but I still went, and I got a first round bye. We played 4 rounds, and we did a cut to top 4, and I made it to the cut to top 4. My first opponent in the top 4 was somebody I'd already beaten. He was playing this Boros Humans deal that Wesco had pitched, and I didn't realize it till after the fact. I was like, thanks, Wesco, you know. So because I'd beaten him already very cleanly, I assumed that I had this one in the bag, and I don't know if he just decided to try or what, but basically he was on this Fiend Slayer Paladin Slayer Stronghold plan. And I was just like, oh, this is fun. And I don't think I boarded in enough removal. And he ended up, I don't remember, he Boros charmed me with like Thalia and some other nonsense. And I was a little upset. So when I'm upset, I tilt, as we're familiar with. And I kept it inside. I did not say anything. I didn't lash out. I just went for a really, really long walk, 2-mile long walk, and found myself at a Target. It was like a sign from God, and spent $20 on snacks, went home, watched Broadchurch naked, and fell asleep on the couch. So my game day ended differently than yours, but I still had a lovely time. but yeah, so that's how my game day went. So
yeah, like there's a lot of like tilting happens, and I would be lying to you if I said like, oh, I never tilt, because everybody tilts. Every single person who plays Magic does it at some point in some way, shape, or form. And there's like good tilt and there's like bad tilt. The bad tilt is what we're used to. There's like, oh, we're playing poorly or somebody top decked this bonfire. You know, that stuff happens, you know. And it would be pretty unreasonable, I think, if I were to say, oh, just don't do it. Because emotionally, you can't just not do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think it's kind of foolish, actually, if someone were to tell you just don't tilt. But like the good tilt is kind of bad too, the quote unquote good tilt, where you top deck that bonfire and you're feeling really good about yourself, you know, things like that. And I think like the best way to like avoid both of those is not so much not doing it, but finding a way to reset quickly, mm-hmm. I feel. And that's how I've been going about it. I've had a lot of winning in matches on SCG Opens. I think I've had like four straight winning in losses or whatnot. And it does get frustrating, you know. I've never top eighted a Star City Open. And I've come very, very close a number of times. And losing those matches, it sucks, you know. But I think, as I said, I think it'd be pretty unreasonable for me to say, you know, it doesn't matter or whatever, like, because it does matter. But if I can reset after feeling that, after being upset that happened, or after feeling down about it, or after getting excited, whatever, I think that's more important than trying not to do it at all.
Yeah, I'm taking the approach of trying to understand it, because I feel like if I can understand it, then I can beat it. So I created a little Tumblr just to sort of document my issue, and I feel like I how some people after a round will think about how they played and analyze all their moves. I am that way with my tilt. So when I walked away from the match the other day, I spent that 2-mile walk going, why am I feeling this way? Why is this happening? Why do I channel it this way? And I analyze it in the same way. And, you know, I feel like I'm not trying to like prove a point or anything. Like I'm not trying to like be a role model for tilt, but I feel like, you know, not everybody who tilts is this blind rageaholic. You know, we know why we do it. We're not proud of the fact that we do it, but a lot of times we don't know what to do. And like you said, there are a lot of people who will give you the advice of, well, just don't do it. It's like, well, that's not helping. Like we need exactly. more than that. And it's funny is when I brought up the idea of like documenting my tilt, you know, I had a couple Twitter followers that were like, you know, I would love to see this. I would love to see what you were feeling and why you were feeling it and what your triggers were. And that way they could learn too, because there's just not enough resources out there to really get someone through it. And if, you know, maybe someone, you know, is inspired to start their own little journal, you know, I think that would be a good thing. But it's not something I'm proud of. I actually feel quite a bit of self-loathing when I do it. And I really do want to beat it. I just have to figure out how. So
yeah, I think there's a lack of like resources to figure out how to beat tilt, mostly because there's so many reactions. Like everybody tilts differently.
Yeah.
Like, for example, me, I'm just, like, super, super quiet. Although I'm kind of quiet in general, but, like, I'm really, really quiet. And it's just like, look, nobody fuck with me, okay? Just leave me alone and let me deal with this, all right? And I know a friend of mine, the way he tilts, he just, like, leaves. Like, that's just how he reacts. And so trying to, it would be really hard to, like, put all of that together and, like, try to find different ways of tilting. But I think a good start would be just trying to figure out, okay, why are we doing this? What exactly is getting us upset? You know, things like that. For me, I feel like I've grown a little bit more resistant to tilting in general, mostly because the very, very first thing I do, win or lose, doesn't matter, is try to see what I could have done better. And that is sort of like a diversion to me being upset at whatever happened, or me being excited at what happened. Because being excited over something, like blindly excited, is just as bad as being upset over something, in my opinion. Mostly because, yeah, you top deck that bonfire, whatever, whatever. You go into the next game, you're feeling great, but you're not really paying attention to what's on board or what's mattering. So I think that's just as important. But again, the point remains, I think you have to really look at what you're doing, what you could have done differently, what you did quote unquote wrong or quote unquote right, and just go from there.
Now, one of the things I really like about you, and I followed you for a while, Anthony, is first off, there's actually two things. The first thing I like is you tend to use the same deck for a while. I feel like with a lot of the Magic writers we see, they're always jumping to the next big thing. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but I really think there's something to be said for riding a deck out through the good, the bad, you know, working to make it work and tweaking it and growing along with it. And that was something that really attracted me to your columns was that you were, at the time, you were doing the American mid-range thing. That's when I discovered you on TCG Player, and you were really, you know, riding that out. And the thing I find interesting about you is you seem like somebody who could play anything. Like, we could put a control deck in your hand, we could put a red deck wins deck in your hand, we could put anything in your hand, and you could play that, and you could play it well. So while all the other pros and while all the other grinders are hopping on the Jund train or the hopping on the reanimator train, you're hopping on the American mid-range train. You're hopping on the Gruul Aggro train. Now you're on the big red train. Now you're on the big Boros train. Why is it that you think you gravitate towards more of these left of center decks instead of doing what other people are doing and what you could be doing probably and doing just as well with it?
Well, before anything, I cannot pilot a dedicated sequential combo deck for the life of me. I cannot do it.
Really?
If you want me to play Storm, I will go home. Like, no, I am not doing it. Like, I cannot do it. If you gave me Storm, I would have no idea what the hell I'm doing. If you gave
Really?
me Elves, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I can't do it at all. With that said, but like, seriously, like, my friend was like, here, play this deck. I'm like, okay, sure. And it was like Legacy Elves. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I have no idea. Swing for two, go. Like, I just cannot do it. I want to learn eventually. Like, I can play combo decks, like, I guess, like Splinter Twin and things like that. I can play, like, one shot kill combo decks. I can kind of play Birthing Pod, but, like, the Epic Storm and, like, Ad Nauseam Tendrils, no. Just, no. I'll leave that to the actual combo players. But, in terms of playing, in terms of sticking to a deck, there's a few reasons for it. Mostly the primary reason, I guess, is because I really, really like what I'm playing. And it doesn't really matter to me, unless I feel that the deck is really, really bad, like really bad, then I'll probably just stick with it. Like, I don't really mind. I don't let major metagame shifts affect what I play, especially in today's Magic, I guess. There's so many different things you can be doing in today's standard that as long as what you're doing is powerful, it doesn't, like, just get familiar with what you're doing. I value familiarity over most things, and it does take me a while to learn whatever deck I'm playing. Like, playing the blue-white-red deck, it took me a very, very long time to really get a handle of what was going on, because for the most part, I wasn't really, like, my range wasn't very good when I first started picking up blue-white-red. I wasn't very high on control. I never really played a control deck before, but that playing that deck really helped me expand my range in terms of being a control deck, playing a control role, not only playing as a control deck, but playing an aggro deck and knowing when to be the control in an aggro deck, things like that. It really taught me a lot. The same with Delver last year. I was never a tempo player. I was strictly an aggro player at that time. All I wanted to do was attack, and playing Delver really taught me sequences and how to maximize advantages and little things like that. And I like learning more so than actual playing the deck, and I will stick to a deck that I feel that there's more to learn from, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Do you think there's something to be said for loving the deck that you play and not just, you know, playing it because you win? Like, I know people who will do that. You know, they'll play the best deck, quotation marks with your fingers, at the moment, and they'll be like, yeah, this isn't very fun, and I kind of hate it, but I'm winning, you know. And it's interesting seeing people that will do that, where they will admit that it's not fun, and when you give them an opportunity to play something fun, and you know, they'll pick a different deck, and they'll have a huge smile on their face, like, this deck is terrible, but it's so much fun. And you know, I just feel like we don't see enough of that. I feel like we're seeing a lot of people that are doing it just because it wins and not because they particularly enjoy it. Would you agree with that?
Well, I can't really speak for other people, mm-hmm. but for me, I never not have fun playing anything. Mm-hmm. I'm always, like, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm playing Magic, therefore I'm having fun. That's just mm-hmm. how I am. But it's really tough to say, because, like, I definitely lean toward playing something that's more kind of out there, mm-hmm. but I'm having more fun. Whereas I would play a quote unquote tier one deck, which doesn't really matter, because, like, I'm probably having fun anyway. I love playing Jund. I played Jund in Return of Ravnica, when Return of Ravnica came out, and I played the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. I played it at the Grand Prix, and I played it in the SCG, I think it was Elite IQ on that Sunday. That was Grand Prix Sandy. Grand Prix Philly was the Grand Prix for Hurricane Sandy, where everybody left or whatever. But I played the hell out of Jund, and I had so much fun doing it because I was learning a lot. And that's the most fun to me, just learning something new every round, every day, every tournament. If as long as I'm doing that, then it's less about what deck I'm playing and more about, you know, just picking up as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I really enjoy about you, Anthony, is you spend a lot of time thinking about what you can do better. And a lot of your posts have to do with your looking back on a match or looking back at an event and sort of the analysis and really these dialogues that you have with yourself. And I feel like a lot of other people don't really do that, where they look at external factors, where, you know, they're focused on, you know, what other decks did to them or what the metagame was like versus the internal. And I noticed Jackie Lee does that as well, which is really awesome. However, do you ever worry that you might spend too much time in your head, so to speak, where you're, you know, you're always analyzing, you're always in there, you're always questioning, you know, and you're not really expressing that, or you're not really doing, it's all internal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I think that's actually a big problem for me as a player. Mm-hmm. I do not have a lot of confidence in general as a player. Like, I don't have that much at all, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I really, really don't. As much as people think I do, it's gotten a lot better. This year, it's gotten way better, but it's still pretty low compared to a lot of other players I know. And I do overthink a lot, and it definitely does get to me a lot. But a lot of times I have to, like, fight it, because it's just part of how I am as a person. I overthink everything. That's just, like, coming from, like, my, I guess, real job, quote-unquote, being a DJ and whatnot, I overthink everything, because a mistake in the DJ world is just, like, the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Magic, it may not be the worst. Like, you can know, like, you might lose the match or whatever, but there's always another round, you know? Mm-hmm. There's always another round. There's always another game. You know, you can correct that mistake so you don't make it again. Whereas when you're performing in front of a bunch of people, in front of 100,000 people, when you make that mistake, everybody knows, and you can't back up. You can't, like,
you get one chance.
Yeah, exactly. When you make that mistake, it's not like you cannot make it again, but it's still going to suck, you mm-hmm. know, for all the people who are listening to you.
Yeah.
So the transition is pretty tough, and trying to separate the two is definitely tough. And it definitely does get to me. It gets to me all the time, but I just try to make it work. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to keep this sort of mindset. And a lot of times I'll just, like, break. And I'm just like, all right, look, I'm not doing shit for a week. Just leave me alone. because I can't handle it. A lot of times I just can't handle it. There's a lot of pressure I feel, especially now that I'm writing for Star City Games. I know, like, from Star City side, there's no real pressure, but I feel like the pressure is more for the people who are reading. More like I feel like I can't let those people down more than anything. So
have you thought about what would happen? I mean, if you're feeling pressure now, you know, I know that you're certainly on the upward swing, like you're what they call an up and comer. And you've obviously taken a plum opportunity to write for Star City Games, which we'll talk about soon. And, you know, you definitely want to be better as a competitive player. But if you're feeling the pressure now, you know, have you thought about what it would be, what it'll be like when you do start top eighting things? And let's say you go to a Grand Prix and you do really well at a Grand Prix, the pressure is only going to get worse. So is that something you've thought about, and are you ready for?
I think I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
Okay.
But as I said, it's very similar to the whole tilt thing. It's not a matter of how much you do it, or, you know, it's not a matter of how much I feel the pressure. It's a matter of how quickly I can reset before I play.
Okay.
And if I can, you know, mentally tell myself, look, shut up, you have a match to play, then I think I'll be fine. I hope I'll be fine.
I hope you are too. Like, you know?
Yeah. Like, despite what a lot of people may think, it is very, very tough. I remember talking to Reed Duke and SCG DC. I forget which DC it was. It wasn't the one that he won the first time around. It was the one this year. And I remember talking to him, and I talk to him pretty, you know, regularly. Like, we're not like close or anything, but, you know, whenever I see him, we'll talk a little bit, whatnot. And I'm like, hey, Reed, what's up? How you doing? He was like, you know, doing all right. And I see him like, what do you mean all right? He kind of like looked a little flustered or whatever. He's like, no, there's a lot of pressure. And I'm like, I think you'll be fine, man. You'll be all right. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. So despite what many people may think, there is pressure amongst most people who are playing at every level. So I'm not too worried about the pressure being there. I'm more just try to focus on the game at hand, the play at hand, the card at hand. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, as I said before, I discovered you when you were on TCG Player, and I followed you pretty closely while you were there, and I was very surprised to find that you are no longer writing for them anymore, that you took a plum opportunity at Star City Games, and I totally didn't see this coming. So what led you to move on to Star City Games, if I can ask?
Well, I didn't see this coming either.
Oh, my.
I was at the Invitational, mm-hmm. and I'm hanging out with a few friends of mine, and I hear Anthony from like some place like out of my like peripheral range. And I'm just like, what's going on? Like, who's calling me? I'm kind of hungry. Leave me alone. And I hear it again, and I like catch it this time, and it's Cedric. And I'm like, oh crap, what'd I do? And he pulled me aside, and he goes, do you want to write for Star City? And I was like, wait, hold on. I like mentally slapped myself in the head, make sure I wasn't like dreaming or anything. He's like, yeah, I want you to write for Star City. Do you want to switch? And I was like, in my head, I was like, yes, fuck yeah. And but I had to like, you know, try to keep cool or whatever. I was like, yeah, I'll write for Star City. That sounds good. And he was like, all right, I'll send you a message over Facebook and whatnot, and we'll, you know, get you situated. I threw a party. After that was done, I always wanted to write for Star City. When I first started writing, like I first started writing like a year and a half ago, I think, or probably a little bit longer than that. I think it was like 2 years ago, because I've been playing for 3 years. Yeah, about 2 years ago. And that was like, I don't want to say my end game, but it was pretty close to it. Like, I've always wanted to write for Star City and or the Mothership. And when he told me that he wanted me to write for them, it was just like a dream come true. It was so insane. And I told everybody, I was like, hey, Kerrigan, come back, Kerrigan. Like, that's like my buddy. And I'm like, dude, he got me ready for Star City. He's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, what do you mean, you know? And that was the other thing that was going on. Like, everybody who like worked for Star City or whatever, they like knew before like anything. And I was just like, everybody knows this? Like, like Joshua pulled me aside. Jerry was like, congrats and whatever. I was like, yeah, it's just, it was a very sweet move. And I, like, TCG player has definitely done a lot in terms of helping me make a name for myself. Frank Lepore is the best. Everybody who works there are really awesome. But I've wanted to take my talents to Roanoke, Virginia, and write for Star City. I thought it was the best way for me to get my name out there even more. And the feedback on my first article was pretty sweet. It was very, very good. And hopefully things are just as good.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I was a little... I tend to feel a little bad for websites like TCG Player and Gathering Magic, because I feel like, and I'm not saying that you did this necessarily, but I feel like people look at sites like that and treat them as sort of like starter wives, where it's like, well, I'm just here to kill time until I can get that trophy wife, or get that shiny job somewhere else. And again, I'm not saying you did it, because if I thought so, I'd tell you. But, you know, I do feel like it sort of creates that perception that people are only with these sites until something better comes along. And it's interesting, because I view sites like those as great sites. And I think that, you know, they make fine homes for people. And you know, I can't help but feel a little bad when I see people like you and Nestico, and, you know, we recently lost John Cavulier. He joined Star City as well. And I feel like people who don't know really the story of the situation is going to see that and get that impression that, oh, they were just killing time, or, you know, these sites are not good enough, or things like that. And I hope people don't think that. And I hope that, you know, Star City is certainly the best at what they do. I'm not disputing that. But there are other options where, if you can't hit that high, there are some pretty nice consolation prizes out there. And I hope that people see that.
How do I phrase this without people yelling at me? I like TCG Player is an awesome site. Gather Magic is an awesome site. You know, Channel Fireball is, like, these are all like mainstay sites. Mm-hmm. And there are writers who stick around TCG Player. I know that Craig Wesco has stuck around for TCG. Melissa has. And I don't know if they've ever been offered, you know, to go on Star City or whatnot. I feel like Jackie was on Star City, mm-hmm. and she moved to TCG Player. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that... How do I say this? Ah!
Like, for I guess the best way to put it would be that everybody has their own, you know, end game, or their own idea of success. And then, you know, what might be one person's happy ending may not necessarily be another's, and that's okay. You know, and I just hope that people realize that. Like, I would hate for people to see everybody else going to Star City and be like, that's got to be my end game. Like, no, you could be perfectly happy at a TCG Player. You'd be perfectly happy at a Channel Fireball. You're all winners, basically. that's really all I hope people see, is that you can be happy at another site. Like, I would hate for somebody to be like, you know, oh man, I'm stuck on this website and Star City won't pick me up. I'm on this suck site. It's like, no, you're in a good place too. You know, like, I just, there's enough to go around. That's the point I'm trying to say.
So. Right. And like, I can't control what people think. Mm-hmm. Like, my end game was Star City, mm-hmm. but at the same time, if they didn't accept me, that'd be fine. You know, I don't like comparing. I feel like Star City is its own thing. TCG Player are their own things. Like, they are their own entities, and comparing them is kind of unfair on both parts, mm-hmm. because they do things differently. I feel that Star City is where I want to be right now. Mm-hmm. And they're giving me the best opportunity to, you know, show myself, show my writing in front of a larger audience. Because they do have, like, the largest audience in terms of magic content.
Oh, yeah.
let's not play around.
No.
Like, that's what they have. So, that's what I wanted. Like, for me, it was a means to work my way up. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what people think about that, like, that's fine. Like, it's whatever. That was my goal, was to get as high up as I could. And Star City is, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of competitive content, that was where I wanted to be. In regards to TCG Player and the other sites, you know, they're awesome sites as well. And, like, again, there are people who have moved from Star City over to TCG Player, from Star City over to Channel Fireball, from, you know, moving around these sites. And I can't speak for those people, but again, as you said, everybody has their reasons. So
yeah. I certainly hope that you find everything you're hoping for there. I don't have to go anywhere, so it's just like, okay, I gotta look for his articles here now. That's okay.
Yeah, well, it's working out for me so far, and like I'm really happy because apparently, and I didn't know this, like my how I've moved up is apparently like unheard of in terms of like how fast it's happened, because I've only been playing Magic for about 3 years in terms of like actual like playing the game.
Sure.
And there aren't many people who have moved from, you know, no, like starting on like a blog or whatnot, starting from like a small site and work their way up to Star City so quickly. Mm-hmm. So it is a lot to take in, but at the same time, again, I have to like keep moving up. That's how I've always been. And not only with Magic, but like with everything else I do, I'm always trying to find a way to get better. I'm always trying to find a way to help people around me get better, to help who I'm working for get better, things like that. And Star City is very, very, very good at bettering themselves constantly, which is what I love about them.
Just don't turn into like a, I hope you stay at Star City Games for a while and that you don't turn into like a Roberto Gonzalez, who I love, but like Roberto was like, it was like
everywhere.
Exactly. Like, so, you know, he started off on TCG Player. He comes on my show. He's like, you know, okay, you can find me on TCG Player. And then 2 weeks later, he's like, big announcement, I'm on Star City. And I'm like, okay, we're going to follow you to Star City. And then a couple weeks later, even bigger announcement, I'm on Trail Fucking Fireball. And I'm like, can you like sit still? I feel like you're an antsy kid. And then I kept waiting for him to be like, and screw all of that, I'm now on the mothership, or just something like, you know. And after a while, it's like, can you just pick a site and stay there? Like, I don't know. I love him, but it was a little annoying for a while. One of the other big reasons I really, really, really wanted you on the show, Anthony, is because I feel like there's also something else that people don't really talk about. And you had written a Facebook post about a month or two ago that really brought this to light. And I really wanted to talk about this. Here of late, there's been a lot of attempts to sort of make the community a better place. And it seems like they focus a lot on women, rightly so. And they also focus a lot on alternative lifestyles, which, again, rightfully so. But I feel like we don't talk about race too much. And I feel like there's still a lot of work to be done in that area. And that, you know, while we're out promoting equality and all of the other good stuff, that we should also be promoting equality in that area too, because I do feel like there's some things lacking there. And you had written a post about a month or two ago, and you had basically expressed some frustration at, you know, the way that you've been treated or the way that people have been talking to you. And you even kind of touched on it a little bit on Twitter. And I don't think it was Magic related, but it still came up again, you know, in your life. And I'm curious about these experiences that you've had in the community with regards to race, if you wouldn't mind telling me about some of them.
Oh yeah, no problem. I don't think it's as bad as the topic of, you know, women or, you know, alternate lifestyles or whatnot, because I'm not gonna lie, women have it really bad, like in terms of like Magic relative to what else is going on. Mm-hmm. Like there is some really, really dumb shit that people do say or act like in front of women when they're playing Magic, like, and like that, going off on a little tangent here, none of that ever made sense to me. Like, why do you have to treat women a different way? You know, like they're just trying to play a game just like you, so why do you have to, like, what, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why can't you just treat them like you would treat any other person, unless you treat other people like that? Like, you know, like, they are people just like you. They are Magic players just like you. If I'm sitting across from it, like, it doesn't matter to me who's sitting across from me, you know, playing a game. I'm going to treat you like a Magic player. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, like, if you're male, female, if you're, you know, if you're gay, if you're trans, like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You are a player. And the people who feel like they have to treat those people differently just make absolutely no sense to me. Mm-hmm. With that said, yes, I have had some, you know, pretty unfortunate, I guess, experiences, you know, being a Black Magic player. Mm-hmm. I've had some, it doesn't happen that often, but it's more about people who think they can say certain things toward me because I am a Black Magic player, mm-hmm. more so than people thinking of me differently, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I'm a Black Magic player doesn't mean you couldn't call me the N-word like we're cool, you know?
Someone's actually said that to you?
Oh, yes, definitely. Like, And I don't say that word at all. I do not say that word. I feel like I am better spoken than that. You know, I don't carry myself that way. Mm-hmm. I can't control other people when they say it to each other. Like, I mean, that's whatever. Like, I don't get upset when that happens, when they're talking to other people or whatever. Mm-hmm. I prefer they not do it in a game store.
Right.
But I'm not going to, you know, start fights or whatever because of that. Like, I'll be like, okay, look, can you like try to not say that around these other people, you know, whatever, you're in a game store, blah, blah, blah. But I have had people say that to me. I've had, I believe this was, I'm trying to think, this was Return to Ravnica pre-release, I want to say. And I've had this one person, I stepped outside, you know, because I wanted to get some air or whatever. I was like feeling kind of under the weather or whatever. And I get ready to step inside, and the person I just played in round two or whatever, he said, I can't believe a black person would play that well.
Really?
Yes. Wow. It was something along those lines. And it didn't really hit me at first. Because, you know, I was kind of sick, you know, I was feeling a little, you know, a little crappy physically. Mm-hmm. And, but when I stepped inside and when I sat down, I was like, wait a minute. I said, what? So, like, I haven't had anything, like, actual, like, putrid or anything mm-hmm. Said toward me. And I could only imagine what it's like for, you know, women or gay people or trans people to, like, really deal with that. Like, it must be, like, horrible for them. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm fortunate in that regard, and I haven't, like, had anything really, really bad happen. Mm-hmm. But in a general sense, like, people, cut it out. It's fucking lame. Like, really, people.
Have you heard things from other people, like, on this? Because I know I belong to a group called Planeswalkers for Diversity, and I also happen to network with other women and other queer folks. So I'm really lucky in the sense that I haven't had to deal with a lot of hatred and bias in my local game stores, because my local game stores wouldn't tolerate it. They may not like me because I'm a tilt monster, but they have nothing to say about me being trans or whatever. But I have heard stories, you know, from women specifically. There's a couple women who live in the New York area who've had, you know, some unfortunate experiences there. And I have a friend who lives in the South who's told me stories about her stores. So even though I've never personally experienced, you know, these things, I've heard about them. Have you had other African-American players say, you know, that they've gone through things that you've heard of, or?
Not really, mostly because I don't really know many other African-American players. Like, the only other African-American person I've really talked to, like, on a regular basis is Cedric Phillips. Mm-hmm. And there just aren't that many African-American players playing Magic in general.
Do you think you know why that might be?
I have no idea. Like, actually, in the New York area, there's a large African-American concentration with fighting games.
Okay.
And I used to be a highly competitive fighting game player myself. Okay. A lot of them gravitate toward there than Magic. Why? I don't really know. Hmm. It might be... I don't know. I really can't come up with anything on that. But...
That is interesting, though.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting. Like, now that I think about it. But, yeah, there just aren't that many African-American people playing Magic in general. Like, you see them, but it's not nearly as much as, like, you know, Asian players and obviously, you know, white players and whatnot.
Is that something that you think the community could improve upon? Like, is there anything we could do to, like, promote that? Or is this just, it's just the way it is?
I think there is a way. I don't know how, though. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, like, how I can say it. Like, I think it's kind of different compared to the subject of getting more women into Magic, because it's generally accepted that women don't play Magic because men kind of treat them shitty.
Because something's keeping them from it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And like part of it is because, you know, men treating them like they're treating them so poorly. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. But I don't think more black people are playing Magic because non-black people are treating them shitty.
It's just they're just not interested.
Right. You know, I think it's different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like the reason, but that's like the first thing that comes to my head.
Sure.
So how we get them, how we get more playing, I definitely don't know. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like really, really like interested. But I really can't answer that question. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, though, Anthony, when I read your Facebook post, I immediately felt very guilty because you wrote that post after I met you at SCG Philly. And I mm-hmm. seem to recall referring to you as like my chocolate love or something. And I was just like, oh, no, I've crossed a hideous line. I've offended Anthony Lowry. And you know, I'm usually offensive for comedy's sake. If I genuinely have offended somebody that I care about, I do feel terrible about it. And I will apologize to them, and it will never happen again. And immediately I was like, oh, shit, I didn't mean to. I'm so sorry. And then I'm pretty sure, and then a week later, you were joking around with me, and we said something along that line again, and I knew that we were okay. But I immediately went in a panic mode. I'm like, it's me. He's totally talking about me. I should have never implied that he was candy, and he was going to melt in my hand. Oh, my God. And I felt really bad about it. And I really think it is up to us, though, also, you know, in terms of how to change that, is our own perception. Like, I'll admit when I go to a tournament and mm-hmm. a black guy walks in, the first thing I say to myself is, oh, hey, a black guy. And I shouldn't be excited by that, and I shouldn't be surprised by that, and I shouldn't be shocked by that, but I always am, and I know that's something that I need to change. And I never say that to them, of course, but it's like, why do I react that way? Like, why can't I just be like, oh, there's a guy, he walked in the Magic tournament, he registers, no big deal. Why do I immediately have to say, oh, hey, a black guy? Like,
yeah, well, there are also people who see a black guy in a tournament and think, oh, man, is he going to steal my stuff?
See, I don't think like that.
Yeah, like most of my friends don't think like that either, but mm-hmm. there are players who do.
Wow.
Because of the stereotype attached to black people. Mm-hmm. And it sucks, mm-hmm. but I feel that I'm very fortunate because I haven't had anything like that. I haven't had that sort of experience happen, mm-hmm. and I think I'm lucky because like I'm fairly like people know, they kind of know who I am. So they don't automatically think that, at least the people who do know who I am or have seen like my work or whatever. But I can only imagine like how it could be for, you know, a black guy just getting into the game who's walking into the local game store. Mm-hmm. Like that stuff can happen. And I don't know. It's really tough because I don't know how we can like fix that mindset. It's just... Yeah.
Well, you also tend to wear some pretty, you know, obvious clothing. Was that a bird hat you were wearing a couple opens ago?
that was a Perry hat. We wore it at SCG Somerset 1, the first open in Somerset. That was owned by AJ Kerrigan. He owns that hat. Ruben Bressler wore it in his interview in his newsening for the Invitational. It is a pretty popular hat now.
I could not get off that hat. I remember I was watching the stream, and normally I have a couple of friends of mine and we'll watch the stream on Saturdays and we'll poke fun at like the decks or the cards or whatever. But I remember I was just like, does he think he's Bjork? Like he's wearing a bird. He's wearing a bird on the street. Oh, hell no. But I just could not get off the bird. And other people were like, you know, watching the plays. And they were like, they were trying to see how tight you were playing or if your opponent was bluffing wrong. And I was just like, do you see the bird? I cannot get off the bird. And that bird haunted me for weeks. And then I saw AJ with it, and the bird seemed to like dwarf him. Like the bird was like, you couldn't even see his face. He was like Vivi from Final Fantasy, I think 8 or 9. I was just like, and now he's got the bird. I was like, it's a parasite. What's happening? I was very worried.
We have this thing where we try to wear something like crazy, like every open for our feature matches. And for the Invitational, I had a pair of goggles on, mm-hmm. like snowboarding goggles. I didn't get on camera. So I think in Baltimore, if I do get on camera, we're either going to do the goggles again or we're going to try to wear sombreros.
Oh, Jesus.
At least it's just a thing now.
I don't know. I may have to hop on board. I would do it solely out of solidarity. But you're right, though. You know, no, at least they know you're not stealing. Because it'd be like, you know, sir, can you please tell us who stole your back? It was a guy, a black guy in a sombrero and his young his young child accomplice. Like, oh, my goodness. Like,
yeah.
So the last thing I want to talk about is your friendship with AJ. You have a very, what I would consider, unlikely friendship, only because if I were to meet you at SCG Philly and you were to say to me, one of my very best friends is standing in this room right now, I would not have picked AJ Kerrigan. There are dozens of other people that I would have chosen. And I really like watching you two interact because he keeps up with you pretty well. Like, I've watched you guys banter, and you would think that him being a little younger, he'd have a hard time keeping up, or he wouldn't know what to say to you. And he sometimes gives you a run for your money. And I feel like I'm watching, like, you know, Rush Hour, like a cop buddy show. You two bounce off of each other very well. How on earth did you two become friends?
We met at Pro Tour Philly, the last Pro Tour that was public, that was open to the public.
Okay.
We talked to each other a little bit before then, but like, we like knew of each other. We didn't really like talk that much though. Mm-hmm. Me and a few friends of mine, we went to Pro Tour Philly just to hang out. Like, neither of us were cute or anything, but a couple of friends of ours were cute. So we decided to spend the weekend, you know, hang out.
Oh, you said cute?
No, we weren't cute. A couple of friends of ours were.
Oh, no, I thought you said cute, like in attractiveness. I was like, what?
Oh, no.
Where's my head at? Okay.
But, so we played in a modern event. I think it was a modern 8-man. I know that we did play modern against each other. Mm-hmm. And we went back and forth on how, you know, I can beat him with 12 posts, and he could beat me with Dragon Storm or whatnot. And we played a few games and he just destroyed me. Like, it wasn't even close. And I think just from there, we've just like became good friends. We're very good at bouncing ideas off of each other and whatnot. He has a very logical, like, the AJ is an actual genius. Like, he is a legal genius. Mm-hmm. Like, if like, they would consider him a genius, the government. So he has a very logical and like upfront approach to things, because I'm very intuitive. I have a very, like, I guess, like, instinctive approach toward things. Mm-hmm. Like, I do what I feel is the right play more than like the logical right play. But AJ's the opposite. So I feel that we can mesh well with each other in terms of like building decks, in terms of, you know, making plays and whatnot. A lot of times we don't agree with each other, but like, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, it's just, he's very good at helping me develop myself as a player, and I feel that I can help him develop as a player as well. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that he is 15. Like, and like, that's the insane part. Like, his mindset is very, very, very mature for his age. Mm-hmm. And it really helps me as a player, you know, get better. It helps him get better because I have a different outlook on games. I have a different approach toward the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've learned not to rule players out at that age. Like, I'll admit, when I first saw AJ Kerrigan, I was like, he is just the cutest little thing. I just want to put a handle on him and carry him everywhere, like a little Polly Pie, just so cute. And his first couple articles, I'll admit, didn't really rope me in. But as he got better and as he started writing more for the site, I really appreciated his approach. And then I saw the TCG Player also had a young man writing for them. And that was another thing that I felt people really had their claws out for, where it was, you know, what is this kid doing here? And he can't possibly know about the game. And I've talked about this before with Genesos. You cannot rule those kids out. Like, yeah. You know, a lot of them, you know, some of them might be awkward or not really, you know, the best or know why they're there. But there are others where they open their mouths and their game and they know what's going on. And you know, I see people say things about AJ that he's, when he gets older and he has more experience, he could be on par with you and he could be on par with Reed and all the others. And I think he's capable of that. From what I saw of him and from what I heard of him at SCG Philly, I'm convinced.
Yeah, definitely. I think if he puts more time into developing his game, then he can certainly, he has a real, real good shot of being one of the game's better players for sure.
It's definitely something to think about. You know, I think Shahar Shenhar is what, 19?
Yeah, something ridiculous.
You know, you can't rule it out. I mean, and I think even Kibler started at like 14, 15. He started off young too. If you really think about, you know, where some of these guys are getting their start, AJ's right on target there. And if he just applies himself, he could certainly get there. And
yeah, definitely. Like, and I kind of feel like I missed the boat on that, because I did start, I did my first game of Magic, my first FNM was when I was, I believe around 15. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't really like playing that much. Like I was playing a little bit, and then I like got a girlfriend, and like I haven't touched Magic since I was like 16 or whatever. And I started playing again when I was around 22 ish. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really get a chance to like learn and like develop anything.
Yeah.
But now I feel like, man, I wish I really, really played back then because all of these younger kids are just, and like, I don't want to, I'm saying it like I'm old, like I'm 25. I'm not like,
you fossil. I'm not old.
Yeah, I know, I'm ancient. But like these younger kids, like they, man, they're insane at Magic nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely feel like I missed that too, especially because of, to bring the episode back around to where we started, you know, I came back to the game. I mean, I started playing when 4th edition came out, so I've been playing technically a long time, but I quit right around Urza's Legacy, came back for Innistrad, so I've only really been active again since Innistrad. And in the 2 years since I've been back, I've definitely made strides. Like, I'm able to, you know, win an FNM now, and I'm able to, you know, top, you know, 100 in SCG event now, which is great. I'm not, you know, poo-pooing that necessarily, but, you know, I feel like, you know, it took me 2 years to get to that point. Yeah. And to get even better is probably going to take me even longer. And if those are things that I could have checked off the list a little sooner, you know, maybe I wouldn't be here struggling at 30, you know, to learn these lessons. And I really wish I would have gotten that head start, because I do feel like I'm really, really behind the curve. And I can't help but feel, and I'm not old either, I'll be 30 this month, but I do feel like that old, you know, when you hand an adult a Pokemon card, you sit an adult in front of Pokemon and they totally don't get it. They see things that we don't, and they understand the game in ways that I don't yet. And I do feel a little envious of that, where if I was 19, 20, maybe I wouldn't be 30, you know, trying to understand triggers and things like that. And it's definitely something to think about. So
yeah, definitely. Like, and I think it's more so that they can, like, it's not so much that we're like, we're not capable of learning it. It's just that we're learning at a much slower pace.
Yeah.
Like, the other thing is, like, these kids are younger, so they have more time that they can put into the game. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we work, we have things to do, we have to be real people. And a lot of these kids, like, don't have to worry about those responsibilities. I know this one person, her name is Mary, and she, like, just won a PTQ, mm-hmm. like, not too long ago. She's, like, 15. And she's like actual insane at Magic. Like, she is insane at Magic, and she has the time to be able to put in the work constantly. And like, every time I see her play, she's getting so much better so quickly. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to put in that time now, but I know that like, if I were putting in that time for longer, I think I would be able to progress faster. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like these kids are so good at Magic, man. It's not fair.
Do you think it might also be because they don't have any, they're not jaded about the game, whereas those of us who've been playing a little longer, we've seen some shit, and you know, we know too much, and we definitely look at the game a little differently, whereas they haven't had to see, you know, what we've seen or put up with what we put up with. They're just seeing some of the mistakes that have been made in previous sets. You know, they're looking at it for the now instead of what, you know, what it was like or anything like that.
I actually think that's part of the reason why, like, I'm not really that jaded, because I haven't been playing long either.
Okay.
So I haven't really gotten to see, you know, what crazy, I mean, I was around when Mirrodin was around, but mm-hmm. I didn't really understand why it was such a big mistake, you know? So I guess, yeah, I do agree with that. I think they don't have to really worry about, you know, what was going on in the past. Like, they can just play with what they have now. And I think that's the same reason why I haven't really really worried about the past and like what people had to go through in the past.
You're not waving your cane going, it used to be like this.
Back in my day, we had to pay three for our 4/4s.
Or people complaining about, you know, reprints and things like that, and why things, you know, when yeah. There was that new, oh God, that land, it destroys a non-basic land in M14.
Oh, Encroaching Waste.
Right, and people were like, it's no, you know, scalding turn, is it?
Wasteland or Tectonic Edge.
Right, and people were like, you know, immediately poo-poo, it's not this, you know, but somebody who's new to the game is just going to appreciate the card for what it is, whereas somebody like me is going to be, you know, old and caustic, and this is terrible, and I think that's why they look at things different than we do, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it's made very clear by Wizards that they don't want Land Destruction to be too good. Tectonic Edge was too good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty clear. And they've been spending years, like, there's a reason why we don't have Stone Rain in the format.
Screw Stone Rain. I want Armageddon back, man.
Yeah, nobody likes that. Nobody likes playing with no lands. Nobody likes that. You want Armageddon and Geist of St. Traft in the same format?
No, I don't like Geist of St. Traft. I was very anti-Geist for a while.
So you want Armageddon? What? What?
Yeah, I used to, when Delver was big, I was riding the Mono Black Infect train for a while. So I was riding that until the wheels fell off. And I knew that I could never beat Delver, but I would consider a match against Delver successful depending on how many guys I killed. So, you know, I would fill out my match slip and I would walk away really, really happy. And people would be like, Aaron, I'm so sorry. You didn't make top 8. I'm like, that's okay. I killed 2 guys. And people were like, but you lost, Pumpkin. I know, I killed him. Just Black Sun Z'd the shit out of him. And that was my way of determining whether or not it was a good match. If I killed no guys, I was very upset and I would tilt. But if I could at least say I killed 1 or 2 or even more, it was a very good game. And
well, the thing with the Delver decks before is that there were generally accepted 3 stages of the Delver deck when you're playing against it. There's a stage where they play the Delver and try to get it online. There's a stage where they play the Geist. There's a stage where they play a Sword. Or Rune Chancer's Pike. And you had to be able to defend against all 3 stages or develop a state in which 2 of those 3 stages didn't matter. Mm-hmm. So that was why the red-green aggro deck back then with the Land of Wild Elves, Strangler Geist, Bonfire, those cards were good against the Delver decks because 2 of those 3 stages, they put a lot of pressure on 2 of those 3 stages, one of the stages being Geist and the other being Delver. The problem was if it ever got to the Sword stage or the Pike stage, then it fell behind very quickly. It tried to counteract that by playing its own Sword of Feast and Famine, trying to make those 2 stages even more awkward. So if your deck wasn't able to deal with at least 2 of those 3, or if you didn't know how to interact with those 3 playing a double deck on your own or whatnot, then you were going to have a really hard time. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people had a hard time understanding that. And that's why the really good Delver players excelled, like the Matt Costas and whatnot. But no, you want Armageddon? You really want Armageddon?
You have to understand, Anthony, I'm an all or nothing kind of girl. I'm a burn it all down. You know, let's not do this. You know, I have hexproof. You can't touch me. No, if I'm going down, you're going down and we're going to do this.
Hexproof is fine.
No, like I'll admit when Jund was on the Sire of Insanity plan, I loved it because that to me is my kind of a good time where we're both just fuck it. We're in this. Let's get dirty. And I don't have a hand and you don't have a hand, but whoever gets a chance first, we're going to do this. And that's my idea of a good time, and yeah. I love that kind of anarchistic way of doing things where it's just drastic. I love it.
Yeah, no, Sire was pretty good. Like I actually think Sire is not too bad right now, mostly because it's good against the other Jund decks. Maybe the problem with it is again like Turn and Burn, War Leader's Helix, and it's also not very good when they already have a pretty good board state. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe Sire would be good again.
I have actually 4 Sires. 2 of them are actually I have 5 Sires. 2 of them are foil, and I open those. So if Sire ever comes back, I'm fucking on it. Just I can't have Armageddon, yeah. But I can empty your hand, and then I'll go down with you, and everything will be great. So Anthony, if people have enjoyed listening to you on this show, where can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
They can find me on my Facebook. You can just find me on Facebook. I will add you, and I usually talk about. You know, I brew up some decks and I throw those on there every now and then. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter at AU Lowry. That's AULOWRY. You can find my articles on StarCityGames.com every other Friday. I should have one out this Friday. And I alternate between... I alternate every other Friday because AJ takes up the spots that I'm not taking.
Uh-oh. That's going to be a fun... Are you guys fighting over it? Is there going to be, like, Twitter feuds? No?
But, yeah, you can find me on all 3 of those. And, yeah.
Okay. So, speaking of decks on Facebook, did you see the one that Sam Black just posted?
I did see the one that Sam Black posted.
Oh, my God, Anthony, hold me.
It is awesome.
I literally spent a good 10 minutes with my jaw open, and all I could manage to squeak out was, oh! And I was just reading it and just... And I was just in love with it. And I was IMing people who I knew would appreciate it. And they're used to me just getting excited about everything. So they're like, all right, Aaron, show me this deck you found somewhere. And then I would copy the link, and then they would be like, and we would just communicate in squeaks, and I was just in love with it. And I immediately was like, I didn't care. And I didn't know how tested it was. I didn't know anything about it. I just started putting the shit together, and I was like, I have a demon and I have the newts, and I don't have any angels, but I can get angels, and I can, and Gen Con's coming, and I'll trade all my Olivias away. I don't care. I have to make this happen. And even now I still have a screenshot of it, and I'm just like, I hope to God he does something with this, because it just looks fantastic. And love it.
It was pretty sweet. I dropped by his stream actually, and I think he was either playing that build or like a mono black version of the build.
Uh-huh.
And it looked really fun. That was actually like how I built like the big Boros deck. I was like, hold on a sec, guys. And I just like threw something up on the stream, and I was like, this looks pretty sweet. Let's play it. Mm-hmm. So, and like Sam is like one of the best deck builders in the world right now, if not the best.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely incredible at building those types of decks, you know, decks that utilize sacrifice outlets, these incremental advantage decks. He's just so good at what he does, and it's just like a treat to see what he can come up with in that awesome mind of his.
I love that he was so like above it all. So like, I remember when I saw him on Twitter, he's like, oh, that thing, I didn't even test it yet. It wasn't even perfected. It was garbage. And I'm just like, what? Like this, like what? Sam Black? Like, and he's just like, he couldn't even be arsed about it. He's like, oh, it's just a pile of cards. It's really nothing. And I realized he's not English, but I imagine him being English, because it just makes sense. So go along with it. But so Anthony, it was a lot of fun having you on the show. And I really, really thank you for coming on. And I would love to have you back sometime. So when you're a big old top eight superstar and you move over to the premium side of Star City, don't forget the little people who loved you regardless.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. And if anyone's listening to the show and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me at legitmtg.com. Then you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The Deck Tees also has its own Twitter account at the Deck Tees. So if you want to know who I'm having on, the behind the scenes dirt and links to episodes, you can also find out more there. If you would like my personal Twitter account, you can reach out to me at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. Or if you want to send me an email, you can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. I am off to Gen Con this week, so the next show will be a Gen Con recap show. I'm looking to find some fabulous guests that will talk about what Gen Con was like, and hopefully I will have a lot of stories for you guys. So thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.